think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 251 of Low Limit Football on this 25th of August, 2019. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we return from a two-week break to find all the top leagues in Europe have returned to action. Fernando Torres has announced his retirement from world football. Barcelona has gotten off to a slow start without Messi in La Liga. City has already stumbled while Liverpool are full steam ahead without Alisson in goal. Juve looked changed under Maurizio Sarri, but did it lead to goals against Parma? We'll discuss that. Bayern Munich has also dropped points while five teams remain perfect in Germany. PSG has already dropped points to first place Rennes in Ligue 1. Take that with a grain of salt. And tonight, we preview Serie A and the Bundesliga. Serie A with Semper Inter's Nima Tavole and the Bundesliga with OS Studios' Jack Grimsey, who will both be joining us tonight. But let me get my man, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Did you enjoy the 2 weeks off?
Absolutely. If only I didn't go. If only I went somewhere else instead of Connecticut. And I see a bunch of my friends and family going to Mexico. But no, it's good to be back. And, you know, besides all the other leagues that are happening all over Europe, we're getting some, you know, we're almost at the tail end of MLS. You know, we're having to decide our playoff teams. And also in the Copa Libertadores, we're kind of almost about to get our semifinalists, and not without a few bit of a controversy happening during the games, great goals as well. But I think VAR is going to be a big discussion all this season, Joe.
Man, you're not kidding. I mean, VAR is everywhere. Like you said, in Libertadores with Cerro Porteño in that particular matchup, that was a little bit of a mess. We talked about it yesterday's matchup between Fiorentina and Napoli. That was a little bit of a disaster. I mean, everywhere. It's and the thing is that and Nima on his Twitter put this perfectly. He basically said, don't have a problem with VAR, okay? VAR is just the video review system. You have to have a problem with the referee on the pitch who makes the final decision. That's the guy you've got to point the finger at. And I think that really becomes important in the foul that we saw with Zielinski with the handball in Napoli. I mean, the ball was 6 inches from his arm, and it gets kicked into his arm. There's no way he can avoid that. And I know it's rule interpretation, but we can't blame that on VAR. We have to blame that on the rules and on the referee and his interpretation of the rule. But I think people are going to mistakenly point their finger at VAR and say it was the video review guy that has the problem. No, it's the referee. He's the final decision. Mm-hmm. He has to go over to the TV and take a look. I've got to say, I want to throw it back at you real quick, because the one that you sent me of the Cerro Porteño was like 30 seconds of video just disappeared.
CONMEBOL made public, following the controversy of that VAR call, CONMEBOL made public the discussion of the referee Victor Carrillo and the VAR assistants. Mm-hmm. And if you look, and there's a video that's been trending across Twitter and social media of both the TV transmission of the actual play and the VAR camera that CONMEBOL made public. And you mentioned that there's 30 seconds missing. So Where did it go?
Right, exactly. Poof, into thin air. That's the magic of CONMEBOL, though, isn't it?
I know.
And, I mean, and with a possible semifinal that could maybe happen in Europe again. I mean, oh man, yeah, impossible.
You know, we've got that disaster on the forefront too. If that happens, I didn't even think about it that way, Rob. That is even more.
It looks likely. It looks very likely.
I'm not going to say the word, but you know how we describe that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
We're keeping it PG-13.
Yeah, but yeah. That one's bad. And the other one that was bad that came out of the Fiorentina one was the Dries Mertens. I mean, let's be honest. The Dries Mertens dive. Okay.
Yeah. Total. That was,
I mean, Greg Louganis stood up in his living room and applauded that one. It was crazy. And they never even went to look at it. They just awarded the penalty, and that was it. And it was like, come on, man! Really?
But even then, you look at what's happening in the Premier League. They've just implemented it, and today there was a bit of controversy with the game against Newcastle and Spurs, mm-hmm. even though they were a bit helped out. Yes, last week against Manchester City. So
yeah
it's, all the seasons are in full swing, and VAR is just being right in the big elephant in the room,
right in the middle of it, man. It's fantastic. So let's dive into the show, man. Tonight you've got the honors for trivia. I will do my best, and then we've got a few things to talk about for opening thoughts before our buddy Jack is ready in the wings and waiting to join us. So your honor.
Right, so we're going to talk about youth players tonight.
Youth players.
not too young, only under 21. Transfermarkt just released the updates of their market value of the most valuable players, according to their website. Mm-hmm. I decided not to go into all the players around the world, but I decided to generally just put it at the under 21 players, because you know these are the ones that are essentially the future of the sport.
Okay.
So, having said that, I want you to name the top five most valuable under 21 players in the world.
Okay. I'm writing down two names right now.
And some of these you'll be shocked at.
I might be. I've got two names. I got to give you five.
I got two.
One I think is no-brainer easy. Oh, you know what? Here's another one.
And he's number one. That's the big hint.
Yeah.
Overall.
Yeah. I know that one. That one's pretty simple, but. That's interesting. And actually, I wonder how old this person is.
Under 21, so yep. 21 still counts.
All right. I think I've got a couple names. Gotcha. We'll see where we stand in about an hour or so. Opening thoughts. And basically, our opening thoughts is simple tonight. It is basically looking at the five leagues individually and quickly, just a quick run over and kind of your first impressions, right? I mean, every league is, well, except for Serie A, every league is two matches in or better. Serie A is finishing up round one today. Ligue 1 is already three matches in for some teams, two matches in for others. The Bundesliga is two matches in. La Liga is two matches in. Premier League is three matches in. So everyone's kind of stepped into the water here, as we would say. Let's start in England, okay? Yeah. Liverpool leading the way right now. They're perfect. 3-0. 9 goals, 4, 3 goals against. Pretty simple math there. They're winning every match 3-1. City in second, they have drawn one match. They drew Spurs 2-2. Spurs, by the way, losing earlier today to Newcastle, like you had just mentioned earlier. Arsenal, third place, two wins and a loss. The top five are rounded out by Leicester City and Manchester United with a win, a draw, and a loss. Your impression so far, especially not seeing Spurs up there, not seeing Chelsea up there. Everton, we thought would be more improved. Wolves were the surprise team last year. They are currently sitting, way towards the bottom of the table in 15th with three draws so far to open their season. Watford only scored one goal. And even Everton has only scored one goal so far in their three matches this season. So what are your impressions so far of the EPL?
Yeah, I think we haven't really seen any of the big games so far in the start of the season. I think the only big game that we probably saw all throughout the entire, maybe two big games, I would say, would be the Manchester United win against Chelsea in the opening day. Mm-hmm. We have the Spurs City game last weekend, and of course the Liverpool thrashing of Arsenal as well. So what is really interesting about, at least what I'm seeing here in the fixtures, is that, you know, you have some of the big games that are happening early on. Next week and this is probably going to be our match of the week, but next week we have a big derby happening on Sunday in England, in London. So, I mean, it's not really been too, it doesn't stand out yet. I mean, maybe we could already see and paint a picture and generally, because, you know, when you look at the two teams that are really above all the rest of the 18 teams in the Premier League, you know, it's basically a battle, I think, what we saw last season of who blinks first. You know, at the moment, Liverpool have not yet blinked. You know, City, even though with their draw, that does serve as a blink because, you know, it is a 2-point gap, but, you know, that could be really important heading into the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But I think what we've seen so far is, you know, we're seeing teams that are generally getting gelling in correctly. You know, we see a Chelsea side under Frank Lampard that is, you know, basically without the use of big transfers. Obviously, the Pulisic one was done before the transfer ban. But, you know, you look at Frank Lampard getting his opportunity there and just trying to gel things in what's happening at the club. You know, you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and what he's doing at Manchester United, you know, getting a few of the critics, a few of the plaudits as well. You know, you look at teams like, Newcastle, you know, who have been dreadful up until today, you know, losing their first two games and the new manager, Steve Bruce. You're starting to see perhaps a bit of what we could see at the tail end of the season. But at the moment, I mean, when you look at the top five, you know, excluding Leicester, it's pretty much on par.
Yeah.
And Spurs, obviously, as well, who are in seventh, but the gap is still so, so tight. But taking out of that, you generally have those teams that are going to contend for the European spots.
Right. And I agree with you about the blink on Manchester City, by the way, because when you look back to last season, both teams had only dropped, you know, just a handful of points. So every point counts. And you know, not saying that Liverpool is going to be perfect the entire season. I don't think anybody will be. But these are the early steps. And even then, Rob, they've still, Manchester City's managed to nose their way out in front of Arsenal. Arsenal, obviously, like you said, having the big loss on the weekend against Liverpool. Those results are going to happen. I think we're going to see that separation start to happen with Liverpool and City moving forward. Going to be interesting to see how Man United handle, you know, all the changes. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now getting his first full season. There's also, you know, the racism that's reared its ugly head, first against Paul Pogba, now against Marcus Rashford. I think, you know, I think the EPL needs to find those people. I mean, and this racism was public. It was on Twitter. You can easily find these people. You can find out who they are, and you should ban them, and then we should be done with it. So, and I think they should make a public example of it as well. So I think that's the way you handle that. I know we've had that come in. We talked about VAR. It's all the external things in football that we tend to talk about. These are the two, VAR and racism, for some reason keep coming up over and over again. And I think, but like you said, I think things have gone kind of true to form. Leicester, it's going to be interesting to see if they can maintain that spot. They've only scored 3 goals in their first 3 matches, so they're going to have to maintain that. Burnley, I don't think we expect them to be up in 6th place anytime, you know, for the remainder. Spurs, it's going to be interesting to see how Everton move forward, how Chelsea move forward, how Wolves move forward, and even how West Ham move forward, especially, you know, a good attacking side like that with Pellegrini at the helm. So we'll have to see. Newcastle is going to be an interesting watch also. Obviously getting their first win today, but at the same time, you wonder, is Steve Bruce going to be able to man that fort? We've already seen the Newcastle fans really unhappy with what's happened there. So that's going to bear some watching as well. So it'll be interesting to see the Premier League as we move on and get close to this this international break coming up. So let's go into Ligue 1 real quick, Rob. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like I'd mentioned in the monologue, PSG dropped points. They're currently sitting 3 points back of Rennes, who's perfect. Lyon has only played 2 matches, and they're also perfect. And Nice has also only played 2 matches so far, and they are perfect as well. This is just a blip in the screen for me. You know, when we did our preview with Jonathan Johnson, we talked about Lille. Lille had the massive fire sale and got rid of everybody. Leao actually came on as a sub today for Milan. We saw Nicolas Pepe, who, you know, they made a big deal of the fact that he's the first guy to dribble past Virgil van Dijk. You know, so they parted with all those pieces, and it's going to be interesting to see. I think Paris will win this league by leaps and bounds. I think this blip for Paris Saint-Germain is not really a blip. I think they will definitely overcome this. It's going to be interesting to see that race for second. I mean, Rennes, very early results here. Obviously, they've only conceded 1 goal. Lyon has scored 9 goals in 2 matches and have not conceded a goal yet. Can those guys challenge or at least push PSG for the remainder of the season is going to be interesting to see. And then, you know, the other guys, Marseille, we wonder about them. Will they come up? Saint-Étienne, will they come up again? They're currently sitting 7th, so, and they've only played 2 matches. So there's still a lot of drama to be held in Ligue 1, but I think, like we said before in the preview, it's pretty much PSG's and everybody else's race is secondary. So, Rob, La Liga, right? Let's go there real quick. Barcelona getting their first win of the season today looked very, very, very mediocre in their opening loss to Bilbao, 1-0 loss. They obviously found their shooting boots today, 5-2 over Betis. Antoine Griezmann, I believe, had a brace in that one.
He did, yep. So, and then he celebrated, like, I don't know if you saw the video, but it was kind of reminiscent of the old LeBron James celebration where he would put like some flower
the powder
or something
in his hand. Yeah,
and he raises it up into the air. Oh, but this time it was glitter.
Oh, geez. Okay. Sevilla, by the way, 2-0, three goals for. They have not conceded. Atleti have not conceded. Real Madrid dropping points late against Valladolid yesterday. You know, giving up. I want to say the goal was in stoppage time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Concerning, Valladolid was a team that was 4 points away from relegation at the close of last season, and here they are pushing Real Madrid. And I want to say that was at the Bernabeu as well.
It was, yes.
So that's a massive, massive hiccup for Real Madrid. And Zidane, with this team feeling pretty good with the 3-1 win over Celta Vigo, then turning around and giving this display to the home fans in their home opener, I think is concerning. Barca's going to get better, right? I mean, when Messi comes back, you talk about Messi being out, Suarez being out, Dembele being out. They're missing a lot of major, major, major pieces. So this is, you know, their quote-unquote slow start, I think, is water under the bridge. I don't think it's anything to worry about right now, don't you think?
I agree. I think when people saw the loss against Bilbao, people were already thinking about, and personally, I think this will be a tight race regardless of what happens. But I think people just need to realize that, you know, the season is like this as well. When you go through it, and I think, how many games? 38?
Yep.
36?
30,
anyway,
38.
Whatever that amount is, it's going to be long, it's going to be brutal, and then you're going to have those teams that have that depth and are prepared to play those type of games in order to get them much more confident. And to win the important games and to rack up points in which they're all far above everyone else.
Yep, exactly. Let's. I'm going to hold the Bundesliga for last because that'll lead us into Jack. So let's talk Serie A. Only one match so far. So I mean,
but what a great weekend so far.
Man.
My God.
You know, I saw John Arnold talk about Chucky Lozano because he was just a few minutes ago because Lozano made the move over to Napoli finally. And talking about, oh, he's going to be, you know, challenged defensively. And then 3-3 Roma Genoa, Atalanta 3-2 over Spal, Torino with three goals in that match, the 4-3 thriller with Napoli Fiorentina yesterday. Goals everywhere in Serie A, but this is what Serie A gave us last season, remember?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think even though there wasn't, I think now, as we could say here in 2019, the old Catenaccio stereotype, that's dead. It's now, I think that's just ignorance at this point and just using it as a way to make people mad.
I agree. One last thing I want to tell you, and this goes into Juventus, and I'm going to brag a little bit because, I mean, this is how strong this team is. If you had this starting lineup ready, you put Gigi Buffon in goal, okay? You start as your central defenders, Matthias De Ligt and Demiral as your central defenders. You can start wing backs as, I'm just looking real quick because I'm missing, you could start Juan Cuadrado in one, Danilo on the other side, okay? You can go with a midfield of Emre Can, Federico Bernardeschi. I'm sorry, not even Bernardeschi. Emre Can, Rodrigo Betancourt, let's say Paulo Dybala, right? Playing in that central role. Then you can start up top with Mandzukic, Bernardeschi, and I'm missing one person here. I'm missing one person. Rabiot, I'm sorry. Move Dybala to the forward line. 4-3-3, Rabiot in the middle with Sean and Betancourt, right? Rabiot, Sean, Betancourt. Then you go to the front line of Bernardeschi, Mandzukic, and Dybala, right? You're starting 11. How good is that team?
Very good.
That was the bench. That was Juve's bench yesterday against Parma. The depth is incredible. And I didn't mention Aaron Ramsey, who's out with an injury right now, so he wasn't even on the bench. So, you know, definitely, you know, and we'll talk to Nima about it in a little bit. Definitely looking like a strong, strong team for Juve. Definitely looking like the focus is Champions League. The key is, are they going to be able to get there? With Maurizio Sarri right now out with pneumonia until after the international break, we'll have to see if they can at least challenge. Because they played well against Parma, but there was only one goal. Giorgio Chiellini was the capocannoniere for an hour. So we'll have to see what happens there. The Bundesliga, real quick, Rob, and then we'll get Jack in here. Five teams still unbeaten. Dortmund, Freiburg, Leipzig, Wolfsburg, and Leverkusen. Leverkusen looked fantastic yesterday against Dusseldorf. I felt bad for Zach Steffen, the American goalkeeper, because the three goals that Leverkusen scored, there was no defensive effort. It was crazy. There was nothing he could have done about it. So, you know, that was interesting to see. Munich obviously dropping points in a tie against Hertha Berlin to open the season. So that's going to be interesting to watch. Schalke. Schalke has not gotten off to a good start. They lost 3-0 to Bayern yesterday. You know, they opened with a Mönchengladbach draw. So I think we're going to see another really tight race all the way through. Eintracht is going to be an interesting watch because no Sebastian Haller, no Luka Jovic anymore. They've both moved on. Timo Werner's still at RB Leipzig, and they looked pretty good so far as well. So you talk about all the strikers. Lewandowski, we talked about him, you and I, yesterday a little bit. Arguably one of the top five, definitely not even arguably, definitely one of the top five strikers in the world.
Oh, definitely. You know, maybe top three to the argument and to the form that he's been in.
Exactly. And I think that I'm going to open with that question with Jack. So let's table this right now, Rob, and let's get Jack in here. Sounds good?
Yes.
All right. Let me just effort him real quick. And joining us now on Low Limit Football from OS Studios, Mr. Jack Grimsey. Jack, great to have you back on the show. And it was great to see you, by the way, at the ICC at the Roma. I'm sorry, not Roma. It was Milan Benfica match up in Boston. That was fantastic to get to catch up with you. I want to open the questions for you now with our preview of the Bundesliga by talking about Robert Lewandowski. Had himself a fantastic match on the weekend. In their 3-0 victory, and I'm looking for it here, I can't even remember who it was now, over Schalke, where I want to say he scored two goals, if I'm correct. He had the hat trick. He scored all three. Robert Lewandowski goes unrecognized quite a bit, and we saw Christian Jarry say something about this yesterday. Is he one of the top 3 to 5 strikers in the world, or even one of the top 3 to 5 players in the world? Where would you rate Robert Lewandowski?
Yeah, Joe, thanks for having me on. And like you said, it was great to see you guys in Boston this summer. A lot of fun. Thankfully, the weather's kind of cooled off a little bit since then. But Robert Lewandowski has not cooled off since then. Like you said, a hat trick against Schalke on opening day, 2 goals against Hertha Berlin. And to answer your question, I think he's definitely one of the best 3 or 5 strikers in the game as a pure number 9. He really can do it all. He has a very wide skill set. You know, like his first touch is phenomenal, and he can frankly just put it in the back of the net. I'm not sure if he's one of the best 3 to 5 players overall, but definitely a top 10 player. And I was just looking at the stats before the show, which is kind of funny that he took home the Golden Boot last year, as he did in 4 of the last 6 seasons in the Bundesliga, but he didn't even have a hat trick last year, which is kind of crazy to think about. He's already bettered that this year, like you said yesterday against Schalke.
And to think about it, this is a guy that 2 years ago scored 5 goals in 9 minutes. Remember that? Was it 2 years ago that he did that?
No, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
More than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's amazing that you go from that extreme to no hat tricks and winning the top goal scoring title to jumping in, you know, right away the season here with 3 goals, the first hat trick. And he's well on his way for sure, Rob. You know, what are your thoughts on Robert Lewandowski and where he lands?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting as to what kind of player that he is. And we talk about great strikers and we talk about great players as well. I think there is a debate that we can make that he is one of the best players in the world because of the consistency that he pulls up. And in terms of strikers, I mean, when you think about strikers and positions, you look at players like Mbappe, you look at players like Suarez, you know, Aguero, Kane, you know, those are the ones that stand out as well. Griezmann, even after today, even though he's not really a natural striker, but he could play that position. You know, there are players that are like that as well. Cavani, you know, but you think about where Lewandowski lands in that list, and you have to put him in the top 3. Whether or not he is the best out of everyone else, that's a discussion that's reserved for everyone else. But he you definitely have to make the argument that on his day, on form, when he's really red hot and so good, he's one of the best strikers, maybe the top, one of the top 3 strikers in the entire world. So can't wait to see how that goes. And maybe we will see as big of a race as we're seeing so far for the top goal scorer. You know, we have to also mention Falcao Gacero, who scored 3 goals as well for Borussia Dortmund, really has rejuvenated his career in a way since leaving Barcelona just last year, I would say. But Jack, just going into real quick, looking into the start of the season so far, even though we are only 2 games in, we did see sort of a little bit of shock on the opening day, the Bayern draw against Hertha Berlin. And you look at other teams that have already knocked up points, winning both their games, Dortmund, Freiburg, Wolfsburg, and Leipzig, and Bayer Leverkusen as well. You know, do we see kind of a similar race that we saw last season where all the teams are neck and neck and it had to take until the last match day to decide the winner and other places in Europe? Or do we see kind of a bit of a gap made by one of the teams, be it Bayern or Dortmund, to the rest of the league.
Yeah, you know, Roberto, it's good that you mentioned that, and I hope that we do see the title race come down to the final day, or at least into May. We were so spoiled last year, even though Byron won the league for a seventh consecutive year, I believe, but it did come down to it. But getting back to that, I think there is going to be a lot of strong teams at the top, whether it be Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, RB Leipzig, and Bayer Leverkusen that you had mentioned. Also, I mean, like, it's interesting because Hoffenheim, it seems like their power has kind of been broken up a little bit with Nagelsmann going to Leipzig. They're looking very strong. They already had the best defense in the Bundesliga last year. Now, I think if they can, they can just take it up to the next level a little bit, although they will be in the Champions League, same as Leverkusen, which I think could be detrimental to both of their title chances. But there really are some stronger teams at the top. I think kind of a little bit of a weaker middle of the pack in the Bundesliga. And then at the bottom, it's just going to be a dogfight really to avoid relegation.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, one of the players that I'm excited for in the season, and we could talk about players like Jadon Sancho, we could talk about players like you know, Lucas Hernandez, we could talk about all those type of players. But one player that I think stands out, who I think is going to have another breakout year, is Kai Havertz of Bayer Leverkusen. I mean, the kid's 20 years old. He's the youngest player ever to play 50 games in the Bundesliga. The kid's a stud. I mean, generally, I was really surprised that he wasn't going to go to another team after all the wonderful campaign that he had during Bayer Leverkusen season. I was really shocked that he didn't leave to go somewhere. But heading into this season, which I think for better intensive purposes, I think this will be his last season. I think if he does perform into the level or even better than what he did last season, I think he won't be at Bayer Leverkusen anymore. But having said that, Jack, I just want your take on Kai Havertz, and, you know, what makes him stand out is probably the best German talent in the world so far.
Yeah, I think at this point in time, you're right. He is the best and brightest of those young talents. He's kind of like a sneaky pick for the Golden Boot. He had 17 goals last year as a midfielder. Like, who is a midfielder that can finish like he can? I don't know. What, it always surprises me, but his first touch finishing from around the edge of the penalty area is just phenomenal. And I think it's just because he has such good technique overall. And that's just one aspect of his game, is finishing. But it's something he does very well, and it'll be interesting to see him become more of a star this year at Bayer Leverkusen as Julian Brandt went to Borussia Dortmund. So he's kind of got a little more of the spotlight to himself this year. Like you said, you think he'll probably move on after this season. I think that's a pretty commonly held opinion, because he's just becoming such a fantastic player.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Joe, I mean, this kid, you know, we have him rumored to go to places like Real Madrid, Barcelona, the Premier League, even Bayern Munich. I mean, would you think a player of his capability should stay in the Bundesliga, or should he try it out and go to a different European league?
Well, you know, you look at Luka Jovic, right? Not gotten off to the greatest of starts with Real Madrid. You almost want to look at him as an example. Kai Havertz is young. Like you said, he's 20. And I think this is a good place for him. This Leverkusen side is a good place. It's talented. You know, the challenge for European positions, he's going to become well-known. If I were him, I would choose to stay there at least another year or two. I know the money calls, the money in England calls, the money at Real Madrid calls, the money at Barcelona calls. But at the same time, this is a good spot for a young developing player to really hone his craft, and he's doing it at one of the better sides as well. So I think for me, I would prefer personally to see him stay in the Bundesliga, because I think it's a good place for him. You know, but at the same time, I can understand the pull from all the other leagues and the other clubs, and the, you know, the spotlight that you think you would get when you move on to one of those big sides, Rob.
Absolutely. And looking at it to another team that is definitely going to fight for this Bundesliga title is Borussia Dortmund. I mean, you know, they did outload Christian Pulisic, who went to Chelsea, but they did get in return Julian Brandt from Leverkusen, Thorgan Hazard from Mönchengladbach, and, you know, really putting in a good side with Paco Alcácer, as I mentioned, Götze, Royce, Jadon Sancho, you know, a lot of good talents on this team. I mean, Jack, how serious do we really take this Dortmund side? Because, you know, even though they did fight to the end in last season, they did strengthen a bit more than they did now under Lucien Favre. How serious can we take them into this Bundesliga season?
I think very seriously. It's a little bit crazy that they competed really all the way to the end for the title last year. Like, just looking at their squad and how young they were and Lucien Favre's first year, they probably had no right to be in the title race for as long as they were. But this year they should not be underestimated. Like you said, they spent that Pulisic money very wisely, bringing in Brent Hazard, finalizing the Alcacer on a permanent deal. I mean, Nico Schulz, even, that's going to help them out defensively, and bringing in Mats Hummels from Bayern Munich. You got to think, like, if they had Hummels down the stretch last year, that could have added a little more stability. A cool head who's been there in those title races, like both at Dortmund and at Bayern. So having him back should be very beneficial this year. And like you said, you're just running through all their attacking talent. They're loaded. And if they have one or two injuries, they're not going to be devastated like maybe they were last year.
Yeah, you know, and I want to echo that. Looking at how they spent that money, they did very, very smartly. And I think Torgan Hazard is going to be the biggest of them, because one of those teams that's always kind of battling for those top spots in the Bundesliga is Mönchengladbach. And to weaken that side, to go and weaken Leverkusen by taking Julian Brandt, I think those are big moves that are kind of two-way moves, you know what I mean, Jack, where not only do you make your team stronger, but you weaken your opponents as well. And they did it smartly. They didn't spend a ton of money on Hazard. It was only £22 million. It's by today's standards, a discount almost on a talented forward, you know, of his ilk. I think they've done a great job. And I, like you said, they bring in Nico Schulz from Hoffenheim, Hummels from Bayern Munich. They solidify that defense. They develop their attacking. They still have Jadon Sancho. They tie up Alcacer. And this is a team that was playing for the title on the last day of the season. So, and you've also looked back. Everyone talks about, they lost Pulisic. But Pulisic wasn't playing that much because he was already unseated by Jadon Sancho. So for me, Dortmund had some real smart business there. They got rid of a piece that they weren't using quite as well. They got top dollar for him, and they used that top dollar to really solidify their team, you know, completely, don't you think?
Yeah, Joe, 100%. And they kind of took advantage of the fact that Chelsea were going to have that transfer ban. They needed to get their business done. So they got a lot of money for Pulisic, who, like you said, he wasn't in that first team picture that much. So it's not like he was the reason they were in that title race to the end, but they kind of took a page out of Bayern Munich's book, which you have to respect from a business standpoint. You know, like you said, weakening their direct rivals, and they didn't even pay that much money. Like, how did they get Brent and Hazard for so cheap? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but good for them, I guess.
Yeah, incredible business, to say the least. So, you know, one more team that I just want to touch on quickly is Eintracht Frankfurt, because we talked about Sebastian Haller, we talked about Luka Jovic, both of them leaving in this offseason, in this summer window, Jovic to Real Madrid, Haller to West Ham. Haller actually, I believe, scored two goals on the weekend, if I remember correctly. But they didn't really do much, at least in my opinion, to bring in replacements for them. So for Eintracht, where do they get the goals from? Do they have the capability to replace the goals that Jovic and Haller take with them?
I don't think so, because, Joe, they combined for 46 goals last year.
Exactly.
Their contributions, goals, and assists. I mean, they still have Ante Rebic. He's hurt right now. And Gonzalo Paciencia, I think he came over from Benfica, too. I think that's a good business that Frankfurt keep doing with Benfica. But I was watching Leipzig against Frankfurt today, Sunday, and they were saying that they were looking to bring in Bas Dost, Eintracht were. So wow. I think they're still trying to get another striker across the line, because it's just going to be really too big of a void to expect to fill from within. Even bringing in another player, you can't predict that they will have the same impact that those guys had last year. And, you know, like, they were involved in the Europa League, that I think they lost in the semifinal to Chelsea on penalties, but at the end of the Bundesliga season they really, really collapsed. Like, their last six games was four losses and two draws. So they just, you know, when you're in those kind of mid-table positions, it's hard to have enough money to strengthen the squad, and it's just something you really need to do, is add that depth.
Definitely, no doubt about it. And what a great name, Bas Dost. You know, a couple of years ago, he was a star, refresh my memory, Wolfsburg, banging in goals. And then I think he went over to, like, China or something like that. Am I mistaken there, Jack? Or I know
No, you're right. No, he's right.
Yeah, and right. But to see him come back with the success that he had in the Bundesliga before leaving, I think that would be a step in the right direction for Frankfurt, no doubt.
Yeah, someone that's a proven commodity and can get those goals. Because it's a pretty strong squad overall. You know that they're confident defending. Kevin Trapp was brought back in. He was on loan, but they made that a permanent deal from PSG. So dependable keeper between the sticks, and you know, like Adi Hütter's obviously a great coach. So it's just having somebody up there who can bang in the goals.
No doubt. So to close it out, let's get your predictions. Bundesliga winner, maybe the top four teams, and who's gonna? I guess the way I should ask this, just looking at the way the season started, can anyone catch Robert Lewandowski in the goal scoring title?
You know, Joe, I really don't think so. He's got five goals.
He's got five goals.
Games.
He scored all the goals.
It's an incredible start.
He scored all the goals for Bayern Munich so far this season. They've only scored five goals, which is amazing. I guess if Bayern scores 60, I guess they're all going to be Lewandowski's at this point. Who knows? But it's crazy. But yeah, I think there's no way Lewandowski loses this title. I think he's gotten off on such a good start that I don't think anybody will catch him. I agree. So. Who's your...
Yeah, and he's fired up too because they signed Coutinho. They brought him in on loan. Obviously, there's a big fee that they can buy him permanently, but it convinced Lewandowski that they're doing a lot. They're trying to actually go for the Champions League because he had been complaining about that they didn't have a strong enough squad to do that in the past. So he's renewed until 2023. So it looks like he'll be at Bayern for the long term, really. But I will give you a couple of other shots for the Golden Boot. Maybe Timo Werner. He did score against Frankfurt. Kai Havertz, as I said, he had 17 goals last year, and possibly also Wout Weghorst from Wolfsburg. He's kind of like the new Bastos, I guess. Okay. But yeah, moving to the title race, it's really hard to see Bayern slipping out of there and not retaining the title again. But if anyone can do it, it's probably going to be Dortmund. So I think my top four will be... Guys, it's so boring. Like, how do I pick the same top four that it was last year to have Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, Leverkusen? That's really not what it's going to be. It just can't be. Like, could it?
All right, then I'll be the brave one. I'll go Dortmund winning the title. They were right there last season. They were there to the last day, and they improved themselves. They really actually improved and strengthened their squad. They're deeper. I'm going to say Dortmund wins the title. I'm going to say they unseed Bayern Munich. I think Leipzig third, but I definitely think it's going to be Dortmund, Bayern Munich, Leipzig. And then maybe this is the year Leverkusen sneaks in fourth and holds off everybody else. I'll send that as my shout-out because I don't think they had quite as good a season last season. So that's going to be my top four, Dortmund, Bayern Munich, RB Leipzig, and Bayer Leverkusen. So I'll get you started that way unless you want to stick with the old vanilla there.
No, I'm gonna actually switch it up. I'll go for Bayern, Leipzig, Dortmund, and then Wolfsburg.
That would be impressive. Rob, how about you? Anything you want to add to this?
I'll say Bayern, Dortmund, Leipzig, Leverkusen.
Okay, so I mean, but obviously the way these teams between the three of us are interchanging. We're going to have one hell of a run to the final week again. And I think we're going to get a great, great weekend on that final weekend in May like we did last year. So, Jack, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us and helping us open up the Bundesliga season. It's always great to catch up with you. And I know Rob and I are planning to get back down to the city sometime soon to catch a match. So when that does happen, you definitely have to be there and join us. And we'll grab pizza again.
Up the villa as well. Up the villa.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know what? Jack, before I let you go, give me your 2 cents on Aston Villa. What are you feeling right now? I know you're wearing the shirt every day for the year, so tell me about Villa.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm really excited after we were able to get a very important win over Everton. I think the scoreline definitely flatters Villa, as that second goal was added right at the death, and Everton probably could have had three goals in that final 15 minutes. But you know, I think Villa will be okay. I've been telling people I'm hoping for a comfortable 13th place finish, but really anything outside of relegation is fine. Yeah. And something to build on. But it's just really nice to have Dean Smith, who's a Villa fan, in charge, and Jack Grealish, obviously, who's a boyhood Villa fan, as the captain of the club. So I think it's just the club's in a very different place than it was a few years ago.
No doubt. And they spent the money. I mean, they came up and they spent the money. So
odds are
they should stick around. So I think it's good for English football when Villa's around. So but again, Jack, thanks again for joining us, and we'll get together soon, man.
Joe, Roberto, looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, man.
Have a good night.
All right, you too.
And Jack Grimsey joining us from OS Studios. Rob, let's jump right into it with our last preview of the year, the Serie A. Nima Tavole was able to join us earlier today. So without further ado, Mr. Nima Tavole. From Semperinter.com, Mr. Nima Tavole. Nima, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Finally, the Serie A is back.
Thank God. So, great, we're going to talk about that tonight. I want to kick off with Juventus, of course. Obviously, eight-time defending champion. They go off into the offseason. They bring in Matthias De Ligt. They bring in Aaron Ramsey, which they finalized from the winter window. They bring in Adrian Rabiot on a free. Really do a lot to strengthen their midfield. They bring in Maurizio Sarri. What are your impressions of Juve, especially, you know, given the 1-0 victory over Parma on the weekend, given how they played in the preseason? What are your thoughts on Juve? Are they capable of going to 9 times?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's been really exaggerated, the criticism against them. I think getting rid of João Cancelo, who is admittedly a very difficult person to work with, sending him to Man City, and bringing in Danilo, who, for all, you know, despite all his faults, I think he's an ideal fullback for Sarri's 4-3-3. So Cancelo was too much of a wing back. So I think that was a deal that suited everyone. As for the number 9 situation, you know, that is a problem. But I mean, Sarri has enough quality in that squad to, I mean, he could move in Ronaldo to play as the number 9 and then have Diego Costa and Cuadrado, so Douglas Costa and Cuadrado and God knows who else on the wings, and it would still work. So, I mean, because I think that's why they wanted to buy Federico Chiesa so badly this summer. I think the idea was to have Costa and Chiesa on the wings and then have Ronaldo there. But as things went on with Fiorentina not, you know, budging an inch, then to rethink things. And I don't think Dybala, you know, he can't play the false nine that some want him to at all. I don't think he suits Sarri at all. So I can completely understand that. I can completely understand why he's so skeptical and unhappy. But to win the Serie A, the defensive solidity they have now, the midfield they have now, is more than enough to win the Serie A, and I think they will.
So, Nima, just looking at all the other teams that could indeed challenge Juventus for the Serie A title, you know, you mentioned that, yeah, they could indeed win their 9th straight Scudetto. But looking at teams that have straightened, Napoli, you know, you have teams like Milan, Inter, who have straightened their teams as well. You know, do we see a similar tight race that we saw in past seasons, or do you think it's going to be a bit more of an advantage for Juventus heading into the end of the season?
No, I think Juventus' huge, the gap between Juventus and the other teams has been reduced. But that's because, not because of Juventus having failed to adequately reinforce. I think it's more because of the other teams having, you know, they've reinforced properly. I'm thinking of Inter here, and I'm thinking of Napoli. I think Napoli with Ancelotti he's been there for a year now, and they've understood him. And I think Chucky Lozano is an excellent signing. I think Manolas is a fantastic signing. I think Di Lorenzo on the fullback is a great signing. But they already had so many good players. I think what they're missing is a number 9, and I think that's why they wanted to bring Icardi in so badly. I think that's what they're lacking, a world class striker to bang in 25-30 goals easily. That's what they're lacking to take that final step to win the Scudetto. But having said, with Inter, it's you know, everyone talks about Conte's first season at Juve and Chelsea. It's different. You can, you know, this is incomparable because you know, you have to remember how it looked when Conte took over Juventus. The Serie A was, you know, Milan and Inter were a little bit past it, so there was an opening to come in, and he capitalized on that. Chelsea, the same thing in the Premier League. You know, City, Liverpool were nowhere near as good as they are now. They were in a rebuild mode, and so there was an opening for Conte to win if he got it to work, and he did. I just don't see intellectually, more objectively I think about it.
It's just so much bigger than it ever has been, I think, you know, teams.
I see, that's where I differ. I don't think the gap is that big. I think the distance between Juventus and second and third place will be much, much smaller. I think we'll see a Serie A where within places 1 to 3 being separated by 5-6 points.
Okay.
I think in the past it's been Juventus title to lose pretty much. They've had it won 12, 11, maybe 1 year. I mean, the 1 year when Napoli under Sarri was fantastic, they went to the wire. But other than that, it's been the Juventus show. They've deservedly won. I think now we're seeing it's much more competitive, but I still don't think anyone has what it takes to dethrone them.
For sure. Now, you did mention Inter, and that's actually one of my next questions. Looking into really what was an interesting summer for them. They got Antonio Conte, they got new transfers in Diego Godin, Radu from Genoa, Romelu Lukaku, but still that dark cloud surrounding Mario Icardi and his future. How do you level Inter heading into this new season, especially competing in the Champions League as well?
No, Inter's, when Conte was brought in, he was clearly told that, he was given a 3-year contract, and they told him in no uncertain terms that he needs to win the Serie A within 2 years. And so Conte said, fine, but I need this. And Suning said, fine. It's very direct action and clarity between the coach between Conte and the directors. And that's great because, you need to have clarity, you need to have direct communication. And that's really important for Conte to stay happy, for Conte to not lose, not become the bitter, angry man he was at the end in Chelsea and Juventus. So, Inter, as I said, this is year zero. There's so many question marks that needs answering for Inter to have that perfect season and win the Scudetto. You have a Wanda and Mauro Icardi dark cloud that the club has tried everything in their power to resolve, but they haven't been able to because Mauro Icardi has turned everyone down except Juventus because they are yet to make an offer. So, if he's decided that he wants to stay no matter what, there is nothing anyone can do. But Conte, again, today in the press conference, reiterated that he respects everyone, but he's also, he's also made his decision. And Conte won't back on that. And the only person standing to lose here is both Icardi and Inter, because Icardi will not feature in the squad. He won't be played because Conte doesn't want him. And Inter will just have to, then he'll sit on the bench for 2 years or on the stand and then leave. No, because it's just that simple. I mean, it seems with Wanda and Mauro, they seem to lack the intellectual capacity to understand who they are up against here. It's over for them, and they just don't seem to understand it, which is ultimately their loss.
So I think what you're saying here is that it's all, I guess, depending on if Juventus put up an offer, because you'd mentioned also that there also is the expected arrival of Alexis Sanchez coming in, so that just continues to make it even much more of a crazy situation, isn't it, Nima?
Oh, it's insane. I mean, he's never, I've never exactly, Mauro Icardi has never exactly struck me as one of the most intelligent human beings on earth, but I didn't think he was this stupid, because it's quite clear that he doesn't understand that it's over. Like, it is over. Inter have made their decision. Conte has made his decision. It's final. It's not going to change. And instead, he's like this child trying to cling on and thinking that he can nag his way down, nag his way into the team, and it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Joe, I mean, I'll ask you this because, there had been also the change of number of kit numbers. You had Romelu Lukaku getting in the number 9 and Icardi getting handed the number 7 at Inter, which, is traditionally Alexis Sanchez's number. Yeah. How do you view this situation going into this season?
I agree with Nima. It's a crazy situation. And I can't help but think that as much as Icardi's caused this problem, I can't help but think that his wife has also been a key factor in this issue.
Absolutely.
And like you said, he's like a child that just doesn't see the answer in front of him, that Inter and Conte do not want him, period, end of story. Nima, correct me if I'm wrong, Napoli did make an offer, if I remember
correctly.
And really, I think Icardi was saying, you know, I want Juventus or nothing, but Juventus don't want him. And really, Juve can't even take him because they have Higuain, they have Mandzukic, they have Cristiano Ronaldo there. Where are they going to go with a fourth number nine? I mean, it's just there's no room at the inn at Juve. So it's very narrow-minded of Icardi to sit there and say, I'm only going to go to Juventus, because Juventus has not been able to move any of those pieces to make room for him. So if I were Icardi, I would have said to Napoli, yes, you know, gladly, because Napoli, for me, is built to be the, right now, at the moment, today, the only team that really can challenge Juve for that Scudetto title. I think Inter has made some incredible moves. I think they are well on their way to being one of those top teams. But I think right now, as it stands, until things gel, especially under Conte, you know how it is with first-year managers. A lot of times it takes time to gel, especially when you look at Conte, who is more of a defensive-minded coach, coming off of Spalletti, who is a much more offensive-minded coach. I think there's going to be a big change in character at Inter, and I think it would be best if Icardi wanted to challenge for that Scudetto to have gone to Napoli, where they're already built for his position. You know, they've had Milic, who's been injured quite frequently. They've got Dries Mertens playing in that spot now. But, you know, no one denies Icardi's skill on the pitch. And I think he's a guy that should have made that move to Napoli, because it's clear Juve not going to be able to take him, Rob.
Well, Ancelotti even called him to, you know, De Laurentiis called him. Ancelotti called him to show that they are really serious, that they really want him. But, you know, him and her, they just don't understand. They just don't get it. And, you know, this was, you know, they created this mess. That's what one needs to remember. When she, as his agent, sits in Sport Media's Tiki Taka show and says the stupid thing that kind of kickstarted this whole thing, you know, with if I get to choose between a new contract for Mauro and him receiving five decent passes per game, I choose the latter. That's what kickstarted it. You know, all of this, that's what prompted, you know, Nainggolan and Perisic to confront him in the dressing room saying, can you tell your wives to please stop talking about me on TV? And that's why, you know, subsequently, as the captain, you know, that's why his captaincy was stripped of him. I mean, but they don't understand that. They don't seem capable of comprehending the dominoes that they set in motion. So it's really absurd. It's an absurd decision. It's an absurd situation.
The telling sign on this whole situation is when Antonio Cassano is the voice of reason. On television, I mean, that's insanity. Okay.
I mean, when the most insane person in Italian career, by having this woman as his agent, she doesn't know what she's doing. She's completely clueless. She, you know, she's not an agent. You know, she's completely incompetent in her role, in that role. And I don't understand why she has to be there.
No, absolutely. And I think it's just going to make matters worse for his career as well, because if he's like, what, 26, he should be at the prime
of
his
career. No one wants him. Think about it, Robbie. No one this summer, Napoli and Monaco are the only ones who've made bids. No one else have come forward to him because they don't want her toxicity anywhere. Madrid prefer the club built on Galacticos and ready stars preferred to go for a 21-year-old over an established 26-year-old. Like, you have to, you know, this makes sense. Manchester
really say, and that's just being kind to Mauro Icardi. But heading into, I guess, more of we'll stick to controversy. I want to talk about Napoli and their game that they happened yesterday against Fiorentina. But before that, you know, you have to look at also what they've been up to during the summer transfer window. You know, they get Costas Manolas from Roma. They get Chucky Lozano from PSV. You know, Carlo Ancelotti, another year on his belt. You know, this team looks very, very serious that they could do something not just in Serie A, but perhaps in the Champions League as well. I mean,
agreed.
But also the big controversy that I want to talk about is the game against Fiorentina, a wonderful game, I have to say, to kick off the Serie A season, but unfortunately was also deemed controversial due to the situation with VAR, and not the incompetence of VAR itself, but perhaps the referees in charge of making the decisions. I mean, Nima, what do you think about that and the whole controversy surrounding VAR this season, and just generally about Napoli heading into another new season with Carlo Ancelotti?
No, I think Napoli for sure. I agree with you when you say that they can do something in the Champions League. I absolutely agree with that. I think they have a bigger chance, if you want, to win the Champions League than they have the Serie A, because at home at San Paolo, Stadio San Paolo, they can defeat any proven has a proven track record in the Champions League. So I think, you know, for them, it's a matter of his tactical smartness and being able to run the team, and then and trying to not maybe hemorrhage as many goals away from home in Europe as they have in the past, which I think has been their away form has been their Achilles heel. So I think Napoli are a very good team, and I think Ancelotti will definitely cement their place as that second place, that second position, and that would be really interesting, because that would be the third consecutive year that Napoli finishes second. They've never done that before, so consistently high up, and Ancelotti is definitely the man to help them win the Scudetto. I think, again, all they're missing is a number nine. But the thing with Aurelio De Laurentiis is that I think he's a really intelligent club president. You know, Napoli is one of the only clubs who have consistently in Italy turned a profit. And he's not prepared to risk anything, the risk the club's financial situation for short-term gain. And that's an intelligent approach. And meanwhile, he's made, you know, on the sporting side, the players they've signed have always been, you know, very intelligent. And almost every single signing they ever make, big money signing they make, is a hit. So, except for maybe Simone Verdi, but that was, you know, there are different reasons for that. But no, I'm really impressed with Napoli. But I just do not intellectually understand how anyone will stop Juve, because they are just so damn good. As for the game yesterday, I think it's a shame. Fiorentina, Napoli showed absolute. I mean, Mertens' goal, the atmosphere, the stand, the packed stadium, it was fantastic. And again, for some inexplicable reason, you had this clown in yellow and his other dressed in yellow and his other clown friends running officiating. I mean, again, the issue isn't the VAR. IFAB, the International Referee Association, that have been implemented ahead of this season, it's a penalty. I personally don't think it is either, but those are the rules. However, the that dive by Mertens, I mean, VAR. One of the reasons that VAR was brought on was to prevent situations from that like that, and he didn't even go and take a look. Now we don't know if the referee overruled the VAR referees and said, no, I'm happy with my decision, I don't need to look, or if the VAR referees saw that and said, no, that's fine, you know, you don't need to look. You know, it's both of those situations. If that happened, you know, one of those two must have happened in both of those situations, and if it's the former, that the referee overruled the VAR referees, then this situation, then again, you know, you need to look over that and say that no, when the VAR guys say come and look, you have to go and look. That has to be a rule if it isn't already. If it's the other way around, that the VAR guys saw both of those situations and said no, it's not a clear and obvious.
I totally agree with you. I you know, I saw the replay a couple of times. I couldn't believe that there was no, either A, there was no review, or B, there was a review and they just didn't see it. I thought that was just in either incredibly blind or incredibly incompetent, one or the other, and maybe both.
Probably. And that's what makes it so bad. I mean, if you cannot see that, when you have video assistance to watch that and you still miss it, then you're just too stupid to do the job.
Right.
There's no other way to put it. It's one thing to miss it as the action is going on because of, you know, everyone can miss it, and you're running and looking at three different places, fine. But when you have video and you still don't see it, well, you know, bless your heart, as they say in the South.
Exactly. And, you know, so let's stick to the Champions League theme, because I do want to touch base on Atalanta. You know, they obviously get in, I believe they finished third last year, to get into that Champions League spot. Many would have expected them to sell, being somewhat a smaller club, you know, in comparison to the Romas, to the Juves, to the Milans. They would have expected them to sell some of those pieces, really kind of pocket the cash that they're going to get from Champions League, but they didn't do that. They were able to hang on to Duvan Zapata, who was phenomenal last year. Josip Ilicic, which was fantastic last year as well. They held on to him as well. And then they go out and they add Luis Muriel, the striker from Sevilla. They've really done a lot of improve themselves here. So, Nima, I'd like your views on Atalanta. And, you know, can they make some noise in the Champions League this year? Can they Can they be one of these teams that, you know, we always talk about a big six in England. You know, we're looking at a big five in Italy right now with Juve, Milan, Inter, Roma, and Napoli. Could Atalanta be that sixth?
Yeah, well, they are. They have consistently been for the past few seasons. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I, you know, when you talk about well-run clubs, I mean, talk about Atalanta is a prime example of that. I mean, they, you know, they're now building their own state. They're refurbishing their stadium that they own themselves, that will guarantee them much more revenue. They made a diligent decision because they can replace him. They brought in Diego Laxalt, who from Milan, who was excellent when working with Gasperini at Genoa, and who knows Gasperini's football and will just waltz right into that team. And they brought in Luis Muriel, who I think is a fantastic signing for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ilicic, Muriel, Gomez behind Zapata, that is, wow. That is fantastic.
Strong.
And they got, it's very strong. And they got to, and they still got to hang on to their players, you know, a lot, Hattebor, who I thought was excellent, and several, you know, many other standout players. So no, I think they've done an absolutely fantastic mercato. They knew they had to sell, and they did. They did. They sacrificed what they needed to do. I personally am a huge fan of Gianluca Mancini. I thought he was an excellent central defender, and I think he is the replacement to Manolas at Roma, and I think he'll do that great. He'll manage great there. But I think in that position was easier for them to replace. They brought in Skrtel. Skrtel has played, I don't know how many hundreds of Champions League games with Liverpool and other teams. So I think they brought in a leader in defense, so that knows how to play in the Champions League. And I think that was such an intelligent decision by them again. So, but I don't think they will do that well in the Serie A because I think their squad is simply not broad enough. Or they don't have enough width, depth, to compete on 2-3 fronts. I think Atalanta will finish seventh this year, but I do think they will go through from the group stages of the Champions League, simply because, I mean, I've always said it. I think Atalanta can this season. They will show that.
Now, one more team that I want to touch on in the big teams, I do want to touch on Roma for a minute. Obviously, the Eusebio Di Francesco era did not go very well. They do make some big changes. You know, they bring in Spinazzola from Juve. They bring in Zappacosta on loan from Chelsea. You know, is Florenzi's time at Roma up at this point, too? Are we going to see another one of the Roma tried and trues kind of get thrown by the wayside because of these moves?
No, I don't think so. I think he will. I think they will probably end up playing Florenzi as a winger.
Okay.
I don't think, or as a defender, or as a midfielder. Actually, I mean, that's the good thing about him. He can play in many roles. I don't see him as a fullback. I think that would he does not know. You know, up until this point, his positioning is atrocious, and in that position, he's just not good enough. But he is the captain, and I think he does have something to bring. He's got a lot of. He's very fast. His speed. He's a very energetic player. So I think he will feature for them. In one of those roles, maybe as a winger, maybe as a central midfielder. So, no, I don't think it's over. I don't think it's over. I do think that Javier Pastore, however, will be like a new signing for them this season. I think he and Dzeko will have a lot of fun playing together.
You know, one last question. I do want to look at one move that was made that I think raised a lot of eyebrows, and that is Mario Balotelli coming back into the Serie A, joining Brescia.
No, I think this is the most beautiful transfer of the summer, I think, in any league, for any club. I mean, it's Mario, 29-year-old Mario, coming back to his hometown, and this time he's one of the, you know, he's coming into a team as an established player. He's the leader. He's supposed to be the leader here. I think he's ready for that responsibility, and I think that I think he'll be very successful. I so hope they stay up, and I hope that he can continue to, you know, play. I mean, I want him to end his career there. It would be so beautiful.
So real quick, rapid fire before we let you go. You already said Juve is going to win the Serie A. That's your impression, that Juve is going to win the Serie A again this year.
We'll be relegated very quickly. And then I'm kind of torn between Udinese, Spal, and Brescia, who go down.
Okay. And Capocannoniere?
One of Piontek, Lukaku and Cristiano Ronaldo.
Wow.
Okay. Can't make up my mind.
The old man Quagliarella is not going to do it again this year, huh? That was magic.
No, I feel bad. I mean, Sampdoria are in a mess. Ferrero, you know, an ownership change is never good in terms of stability in the short run. And also, Di Francesco is not the guy to, is in my opinion, not the right man to lead a ship when things are unstable. So I'm worried for Sampdoria. I hope they stay up. I hope Quagliarella has a, you know, can keep them up, but I doubt it.
Very, very interesting to watch. Nima, thanks again for coming on the show and helping us break down the city. We had a great time, and always a pleasure when we get together, man.
Always a pleasure. Always. I love your show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you.
You too. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
And that was Nima Tavale from SemperInter.com helping us break down the city. Sorry about there was a little audio glitch there. His predicted order of finish for, I think it was the top six or seven, was Juve first, Napoli second, Inter third. I think he had, if I remember correctly, Milan fourth. I'm sorry, not Milan fifth, Roma sixth, and he thought Atalanta was going to be seventh. So I saw that glitch happen there at the last second, so I apologize for that. But, you know, it's a, again, great season, good start to the Serie A. It's not your your old man's Catenaccio that it used to be with all the goals going in. And I think we've seen a turn in the Serie A for all the added goal scoring. Rob, I know we're running a little short on time. We're running a little long here tonight. Let me give some matches of the week coming up, and then we can get back into the trivia question. Does that sound good?
Yes. Right,
let's do it. So Tuesday night, we've got quarterfinals of the Copa Libertadores coming up. Tuesday, Palmeiras Gremio. Currently, Palmeiras leads 1-0 on aggregate. That match is at 8:30 p.m. On Thursday, Cerro Porteño River Plate kick off their second leg. River currently leading 2-0. That one is Thursday at 6:15 p.m. Then on Friday, we have Mönchengladbach RB Leipzig playing 2:30 p.m. On Saturday, we have Juve Napoli, possibly the biggest match on the weekend, if not the biggest, one of the two biggest ones. Juve Napoli Saturday, 2:45 p.m. And then Saturday night, New England Revolution and Toronto FC kick off in MLS, 7:30 p.m. On Sunday, 9 a.m., battle of top teams in France, Rennes and Nice. Bet you didn't expect those two names. 9 a.m., those two kick off. Then on Sunday, we also have what I said is possibly the other biggest match, Arsenal-Tottenham, the London Derby, 11:30 a.m. And then we'll close it all out with a match between Villarreal and Real Madrid in La Liga, 3 p.m. on Sunday. So those are your matches of the week to come up. Rob, do you want to give me the trivia question again?
Yes, absolutely. So Transfer Market has just updated the market values of all their players in the world. I was going to give you the most valuable players in the world based on their market value, regardless of age, but I'm only going to give you, I'm only going to ask you, what are the top five most valuable under 21 players in the world?
Okay, so the easy one is Kylian Mbappe. He's number one.
Mbappe is number one, not just in his age group, but in the entire world at 200 million euros of his market value.
There you go. Number two, and the only reason I'm giving you these names because they went for high transfer fees. I'm going to go with Matthias De Ligt. Is he on that one as top five?
He is not on the list.
Ooh, wow.
He is sixth at 75 million.
Christian Pulisic
is not on the list. He's 10th.
Wow. And the other one I added was Frankie de Jong.
Frankie de Jong is not on this list. I don't think I think he's 22 now anyway, so he wouldn't make the list.
I'm striking out like crazy. Jadon Sancho.
Jadon Sancho is second on the list at 100 million euros of his market value.
Okay, I'm pretty tapped out of names here. Luka Jovic is not, he's too old for the list.
No, but he is 21, but he's not on the list. He's 11th at 60 million.
Oh, okay. Who's a young player? I wonder if Moise Kean's on there.
He's not on the list, but he is 19th at 40 million.
Okay.
Give you a hint.
Okay.
English players. Two of them. Two English players.
Well, I already gave you Sancho.
Yep. And a player that we talked
about. Callum Hudson-Odoi?
Nope. He's not on the list.
Wow.
We were talking about him in the opening thoughts.
Ooh, an opening thoughts. Hang on a second.
And the other one is
Marcus Rashford.
Marcus Rashford is fifth on the list at 80 million.
So I have Mbappe, Sancho, Rashford, and I'm missing two. You were giving me a hint again?
Sure. European champion.
European champion. So Trent Alexander-Arnold?
He's fourth on the list at 80 million as well.
Wow.
One more. We were talking about this guy with Jack.
Oh, Kai Havertz.
Kai Havertz is third on the list at 90 million. So the list as follows of the top five most valuable players according to Transfer Market: Kylian Mbappe of PSG at 200 million euros, Jadon Sancho of Borussia Dortmund at 100 million euros, Kai Havertz of Bayer Leverkusen at 90 million euros, and Trent Alexander-Arnold of Liverpool and Marcus Rashford of Manchester United both on 80 million euros.
Great trivia question tonight. That's a great one. So, all right, men, like I said, we ran a little late, but it was well worth it to preview the Bundesliga and the Serie A. So without any further ado, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, and then we'll get you a preview for next week's show, which traditionally next week's show would be our mega show, our 6th anniversary show. But I think Rob and I, you haven't agreed that we're going to do something a little more light because of the stress involved in putting that show together. So we will come back next week. We're going to attempt to have a big guest. It is our 6th anniversary show. It'll be light, it'll be fun, and it'll be great, and we're going to have a great time doing it. So I want to thank Nima Tavale from SemperInter.com and Jack Grimsey from OS Studios for joining us to break down the Serie A and the Bundesliga as our final preview shows of the season. So for episode 251 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Marita Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.